been apprehended and
Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Juba and my colleague Nabil Biagio is on standby in Studio 14 in Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan this 11th anniversary of the country's independence this Saturday, July 9, 2022. UK's ambassador to South Sudan says South Sudanese leaders should create a new roadmap for the implementation of the 2018 peace agreement.
What I expect to see there is a set of things that they say we will do this by this date, this by this date, this by this date. Those dates will have been chosen by them, and we'll expect to see those things happen. Because it's very difficult when quite often what you see is, oh, well, this will happen next week, this will happen next week, but it doesn't happen.
And some South Sudanese say the international community has abandoned them.
No matter how much international goodwill, no matter how much money is poured in from outside, no matter the diplomatic pressures, the reality is that no one can solve the problems of South Sudan except the South Sudanese themselves.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. But we first go to Juba, where President Kiir congratulated South Sudanese today during his speech to the nation. Mr. Kiir said South Sudan was entangled in a senseless war that ended in 2018, adding that the war prevented the country from holding public celebrations on the Independence Day. Mr. Kiir says the war-induced economic crisis in the country and the corona pandemic also prevented South Sudanese from celebrating their independence anniversary. He said this year, the government scaled down public celebrations because of other competing priorities, which did not allow the government to commit resources to support public celebrations. Mr. Kiir urged the government and the public to celebrate the independence in any way they deem fit. The U.S. State Department issued a statement congratulating the people of South Sudan on 11 years of independence. The Biden administration says it stands with the people of South Sudan. The State Department says, quote, "We are committed to working with the transitional government, a free and open civil society, and regional and international partners to create a path towards a democratic future." The statement says the U.S. administration supports the efforts of the South Sudanese people to build lasting peace and create a civil society marked by dignity, opportunity and prosperity, end of quote. The statement urged South Sudan's leaders to realize their people's aspirations and take concrete steps to build a unified security service that respects human rights, to establish accountable and transparent economic management, and to create strong democratic institutions and a conducive environment to support free, fair, and credible elections. The UK ambassador to South Sudan says there is a need for parties to the revitalized peace deal to come out with new roadmap on the implementation of the peace deal, define what it needs to be done, including conducting elections, as efforts of existing transitional period is due to come to an end in less than 8 months. Wake Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
In an exclusive interview with South Sudan in Focus, Ambassador Johnny Baxter says the unity government and its parties should go back to a drawing board to decide how to end the peace deal's transitional period, which is supposed to happen in less than 8 months from now. Baxter says the parties should seriously engage one another and forge confidence in the way of doing things. He says while some progress has been made on certain items such as preventing catastrophic levels of national conflicts, it's not satisfactory to the international community.
I think at the moment many people feel a bit low, feel a bit sort of, well, as your questions have implied, worried. If there was progress, if there are more things that can be pointed to as steps in the right direction, then I think you'll find, the country will find, that a lot of things unlock, that it becomes a lot easier to argue the case for the things that South Sudan is asking for.
Baxter says more engagement between the parties will forge confidence not only among South Sudanese, but the country's partners in the international community. Government spokesperson and information minister Michael Makwe has repeatedly claimed that a lack of resources and sanctions have derailed the efforts to carry out the peace agreement. Ambassador Baxter says the slow pace of implementing the deal is the making of the unity government.
Neither the lack of funding nor sanctions and the arms embargo are the main causes of, or indeed actually causes of, the slow implementation, I'm afraid. It is about demonstrated will and about pace. And I think one of the things that we all need to be clear about is that a change in pace, a change in results, will produce quite a significant change in atmosphere as well.
Baxter says his government believes carrying out the peace agreement is the best way to restore peace and stability in South Sudan. He says the parties should provide a clear roadmap for arriving at that destination.
What I expect to see there is a set of things that they say we will do this by this date, this by this date, this by this date. Those dates will have been chosen by them, and we'll expect to see those things happen. Because it's very difficult when quite often what you see is, oh, well, this will happen next week. This will happen next week, but it doesn't happen. That takes away people's confidence. Much better to say this will happen in 6 weeks' time and then to deliver it. So that's what will make a difference.
Ambassador Baxter says the roadmap should also spell out clearly steps that will lead to conduct of elections.
Underlining that as well, therefore, is going to be the work that's needed to get elections in place, to get a permanent constitution in place, and then to have the protection of political and civic space. Because along with the ways in which differences are dealt with, what's just as important is that differences have to be aired.
The United Nations mission in South Sudan, or UNMISS, late last month echoed similar calls for the South Sudan unity government to present a roadmap that should drive the country towards conducting elections and ending the implementation of the revitalized peace agreement. Nicholas Haysem, the United Nations Special Representative of the Secretary General, says the UN is willing to support the government in conducting the elections, but it wants to see a clear roadmap. On the other hand, women need to be part of the government's leadership because they play a greater role in good governance, Baxter says. He says he finds it shocking and hard to understand that 3/4 of women in South Sudan will experience physical or sexual violence in their lifetime, saying there is desperately need whatever activity to stop such situation.
Women must play a much, much bigger role in promoting peace and security, peace and stability. And there's a commitment to have a minimum of 35% female representation. This must be honoured. It must be honoured because it's going to make for a better government. It's going to make for a government that is more representative, representative of the breadth of the country and the people in the country. But I think it also must be honoured because it's one of the steps that's needed to address the absolutely terrible situation faced by many women across South Sudan today.
Ambassador Baxter says the solution to the country's problems should come from within South Sudan.
We and others support the peace process. We support the people of South Sudan. But it's got to be the South Sudanese, and within that the government, who have the primary responsibility to implement and to fund this peace agreement. And to the government, I would say, if you can afford war, then you can afford peace.
The United Kingdom is one of South Sudan's biggest donor partners. It's part of the troika that has supported the peace process for years, culminating in the signing of the revitalized peace deal in 2018. Over the past 4 years, following the signing of the peace agreement, the UK government has spent $174 million on health, $52 million on education, and $460 million on humanitarian aid. It also provides technical support to South Sudan. Baxter says his government will continue to support the Kiir administration as long as the parties effectively work towards achieving peace and stability in the country. For VOA News, I'm working Simon Wudu in Juba.
Still in Juba, South Sudan and Ethiopian leaders say they are working to maintain what they call the fraternal relations between the two countries. The officials made the remarks in Juba this week, where the Ethiopian embassy organized an Ethiopian South Sudan people-to-people forum as part of events leading to South Sudan's 11th independence anniversary today. For VOA News, Viola Elias reports from Juba.
Traditional dancers and local singers entertain guests, including South Sudanese leaders, war veterans, and women's rights leaders, who were gathered at Juba Palm Africa Hotel to celebrate South Sudan's 11th independent anniversary. The Ethiopian embassy in Juba organized to reflect on what they call the two nations' long-standing and historic relations. Speaking at the event, Aban Dengai, South Sudan's vice president in charge of the government infrastructure cluster, noted that Ethiopia supported Southern Sudanese in their fight for freedom and dignity as far back as 1955 during the Torit Mutiny, which touched off the struggle for the independence of what is now South Sudan.
The Ethiopian government under Mangiso Haile Mariam in 1983 supported the SPLM-SPLA for a just cause. This military and political support from the government and people of Ethiopia continued during Comrade Madazanawi, during Comrade Haile Mariam the Challenge, and the current government of Dr. Abiy Ahmed until we got our independence. We lost many comrades, Ethiopian lives and Eritreans in the soil of South Sudan, especially the major battles in Equatoria and Afrika. The fallen heroes from our sister countries, Ethiopia and Eritrea, they are heroes and heroines. They fought for a just cause, for a war of freedom and dignity for their brothers in the Republic of South Sudan.
Guy says the government will soon implement several major development projects that will connect the country to Ethiopia.
The road from Pagak to Mathian, Paluch, Malakal, to Beto, to Baragazel. That road is a very important corridor. It will connect us to Ethiopia for our export and import, and also to the port of Djibouti in Djibouti, and also to the port of Barbara in Somalia. That corridor is very important. It's a shortcut to the people of Baragazel and Upper Nile. It's a shorter distance compared to Mombasa. We are also working to connect Ethiopia with us through the road of Rad, Guma, to Eastern Equatoria and Baraga and Uganda, and also the road from Rad to Buma, Tibor and Bor.
Guy says South Sudan also signed an MOU with Ethiopia to import electricity from Radisson Dam. Rebecca Joshua Okwachi, the chief whip for the SPLM in government in the Transitional National Legislative Assembly, praised the Ethiopian embassy for organizing the event. Okwachi, who says she joined the SPLM-SPLA-led liberation struggle at a young age, notes that Ethiopia gave the late John Garang and President Salva Kiir an environment to strategize on how to continue the struggle after 1991 split in the movement. Okwachi, who worked for the Ethiopian-based radio SPLM during the liberation struggle, says she well remembers Ethiopian support during that time.
We did not get that environment in Ethiopia. It was going to be very difficult for us to send out the message to our people. The intention of the radio was not to fight anybody, but it was to educate the public, the people of South Sudan, or the Sudanese by then, but in the South, or the oppressed ones, as what was the cause of the revolution. And information is very important. People could be misled.
Okwachi says The SPLM-SPLA fighters experienced love, freedom, and opportunities in Ethiopia to an extent that many South Sudanese men married Ethiopian women during the struggle, which helped build social relations between the two countries. For his part, the Ethiopian ambassador to South Sudan, Nabil Mahdi, commended South Sudanese for taking care of Ethiopians, especially during the time the country was in conflict.
Relation is not an ordinary one. Neither is transactional. This is not a diplomatic nicety either. It is rather built on enduring principles which have been guarded by priceless lives. Hundreds of Ethiopians have fallen alongside their brothers and their sisters for a greater cause.
Mahdi encouraged South Sudanese who experienced the struggle to write down their experiences so that new generation know their stories. Eritrea ambassador to South Sudan, Ioannis Tekle Mekaya, who attended the event, says the long-standing relationship between Eritrea and South Sudan goes back 3 decades.
The Eritreans, as everybody knows and agreed, you know, they consider as home South Sudan. Whether South Sudan is in peace or in war, Eritreans as well as Ethiopians stand firmly with the people and government of South Sudan. When this is history, by the way. I will be conclude by saying that, you know, we'll be always with the people and the government of South Sudan in any situation.
South Sudan leaders said they will not organize public celebrations of the country's 11th independent anniversary due to a lack of funds. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America, coming to you live from Juba. With me in the studio here are two young South Sudanese men and a lady who will discuss issues on the role of peace, youth in peace building. That story is coming to you right after this break. Eleven years after the country's independence, some young South Sudanese say they have not seen much improvement in service delivery across the country. To discuss this matter on this live broadcast, I'm joined in the studio by Dr. Chol Pal, a South Sudanese medical doctor working here in Juba, and Maura Ajak, an award-winning South Sudanese journalist, and Wani Kolang, a media entrepreneur. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to this live broadcast. I've already introduced you. Maura, there's a problem here. People are saying they have not seen much changes in their lives since the country gained independence. What do you say about this?
I can say there are a lot of changes, but it's not seen. It's not told enough. And it depends on the roles every person that is doing within the community or within each entity that they're running. Yeah.
And Dr. Chol, what do you have to say about this?
Yeah, I tend to disagree that there are no peace dividends visible.
I'm Nabil Biagio, coming to you live from Studio 14 in Washington, D.C. My colleague John Tanza in Juba seems to be experiencing technical difficulties. We're going to pause for a moment and hear from South Sudanese citizens we asked earlier to tell us how they feel about the country's 11th birthday. Here's what they had to say.
Since we got our independent, things are okay with us, especially as the kids, we go to school. Like, we get many things like we used not to get, but since we got our independence, we are given special care. Like, they give us school, we go to schools, we go to church, we do everything, they give us our needs.
It is good for us, a new generation, womb seen, to have Independence Day. we have our own independent country, which is very good to us as Southern Sudanese and fellow youth also, as like this to be part of this independent day. For me, many things to be approved, to be improved. We need developmental to go on, project to go on, so that we see another developmentals next year also, not now.
I feel happy because it's the day that we have achieved our liberation and we've got our new South Sudan. And I always feel happy and excited when celebrating that day. We really need improvement in the governance of the government because a lot of citizens are suffering. Although we have got our independence, but we are still suffering.
There is room for hope for the change in the country as per the way the government is organizing for open, fair and free elections in the country. Also, I have seen that people are chanting for the planned independence of the country. And actually, it is a wish of all the people of South Sudan to be reborn once again and to see peace and to see development and to see growth of the economic activities across the country and to have other relations with neighboring countries and countries with similar economies.
Though it's not there in the plan of the government because of some other reasons, but I think individually you can celebrate in your various capacities. Yes, and what is supposed to be done for independent, like, you know, it's now the 11th anniversary. Yes, and it's been long without people being celebrating it, like, official. Yeah. So I'm appealing, to the government, at least for next year, we should really celebrate it as a nation.
As a citizen, the most important thing is to be independent. So we attend it and we are very happy for it. We only need some few things to be improved, especially the level of life, the condition of life that we need to focus on, because the country cannot grow when the life situation is not okay. So I urge the citizens to work hard on securing food and the national security that can make us move freely and have enough food to eat.
It's a great day that people should always commemorate every year. Each and everyone should celebrate at least the independence that we get, and we should be proud of our country. We should work together with the government in whatever they may need, where they need help, where necessary. We should work together with them if they call for our assistance.
As a citizen, the most important thing is to be independent. So we attend it and we are very happy for it. We only need some few things to be improved, especially the level of life, the condition of life that we need to focus on, because the country cannot grow when the life situation is not okay. So I urge the citizens to work hard on securing food and the national security. That can make us move freely and have enough food to eat.
We want peace. This is the first thing we want to improve. Security all over the country has to improve, because right now we are facing a lot. A lot is happening, like last week, it has been happening a lot. All this, like, state, a lot has been happening. So all we want, like, the government to, like, we have to be free. We have to be in peace in villages, and we have to have free movement from town to villages. That's what we want. We don't want people to be in refugee again. We want all of them to come back. I wish all of them to come even from camp and maybe celebrate with us the day.
The independence of South Sudan has no meaning, because something that could be important is when we have obtained our independence and we develop ourselves. We develop education system, we develop health, we develop roads and villages, and we put a correct system of governance in the country. But hereafter, there is no law in South Sudan. Laws are there, yes, but not implemented. I call on South Sudan leaders to prioritize democracy, equality, prosperity, and respect for all, because there is no justice in South Sudan.
11 years after the country gains its independence, some young men and women say they have not seen much improvement in service across country. To discuss this matter on this live broadcast, I'm joined by Dr. Chol Pal, a South Sudanese medical doctor, Maura Ajak, an award-winning journalist, and Lokwani Lokulang, a media entrepreneur. I was talking to you, Dr. Pal. You say a lot of people have no opportunity. That's why they complain. Who should give them the opportunity?
Yeah, it is. I'm not saying that we should all be working in the government or that the government should give us opportunities. But when you want to get an opportunity, you need security in the first place. You also need support in terms of capital, subsidies from the government. For instance, if I'm now working in the health sector privately, for me to set up a clinic, I must need some money. And where do I get the money? I get the money from either the government or a businessman, so that I go and set up my business, and then I give them back their money if my business prosper. The other problem with the youth is because, as I said before, they are divided on tribal line. They are following the politicians. And it is this tribalism that has emboldened the politicians to keep the country at war. That is the point that I want to stress on.
Hey, Wani Lokulang, you have been involved in the media industry, you know, creating a job for yourself. But what do you say to young men and women who say there are no opportunities in South Sudan and the government has forgotten them?
Actually, I would say that most of us, the youth, are actually involved in the government than most of the youth that have not. But it's just that we're not positively involved in the politics of the country. Why I'm saying
and
so?
And why is that?
It's because, you see, most of the youth who are involved in the government today, they are there because their uncle is there, or, like, you know, they are going with the intention of, like, you know, getting money, looting, and all of these things. But no one is declaring their allegiance to the country. And that's a bigger problem. But when you talk about, like, you know, the youth involvement in the politics, there are a lot of youth in the politics, actually.
Ajak, what is your say on these two young men who are saying that the opportunities are there, but you need to look for ways of how to make good use of it?
It's about the vision and the passion and the nationalism. And most of the youth, they're prioritizing authority than thinking of the priority.
What do you mean by prioritizing authority? I'm not understanding that.
Currently, 70% of the youth, they are either national security or in the army, running the junior positions. And yet they are the same people who are going to step back of the other youth. For instance, if you have a business, you are progressing or successful, you'll find another fellow youth will go and say, this person shouldn't proceed, you see. And
so you're talking about backstabbing?
Yes.
You know, people are backstabbing.
It's a lot.
Why?
Because we don't have a vision. Like most of the youth, they don't have a vision. If you had a vision, for instance, I can give an example. When we were in Sudan by then, 90% of South Sudanese youth, they were the ones who were involved in infrastructure of Sudan, the buildings, the fancy
places. Yeah, I remember I used to take part in construction in Khartoum.
Where is that spirit now? Where is it? Why we lost it?
Wani, talk to us about your journey in the media industry. Is it an easy, you know, gig?
It's not an easy gig, but let me just add something little on what Maura just said. I think the reason why there is a backstabbing is because we, the youth, are divided. And we are divided because, like I said earlier on, we are not, like, you know, seeing each other as brothers. Instead, I'm seeing this one as from this tribe, I'm seeing this one from this community, and all of this one. So in the end, like, you know, we don't have that, like, you know, spirit of working together, like, you know, focusing on trying to develop the country and developing ourselves in the end.
And Dr. Jack, how is this country going to transform if the youth who are the backbone of the country or the future of the country are divided, as Maura has said and Kulang has said here? How will this country progress?
Yeah, this country will not progress unless the youth unite. If they unite, then they say no to tribalism, then they don't follow their uncles in the ministries, as like my colleagues just said, you find youths competing for ministerial posts, not for development. They need money. Even where I come from, people are fighting over, I should be a commissioner, I should be a minister. Not because you want to do something to leave it there in other legacy.
But you intend to get money. Hold your thought on those issues. Let's go to what other South Sudanese are saying in diaspora. A young South Sudanese activist in diaspora says the leaders of his country have done very little to address some of the challenges facing young men and women in South Sudan. Victor Sobek says the government of South Sudan is buying expensive cars, neglecting the conditions of South Sudanese.
Honestly, I am very disappointed.
Why are you disappointed?
I was one of the first people, I mean, from people that I know, that actually went to South Sudan in 2006. This is after, I would like to say, since 1990, when we left South Sudan. So when I went back, this is after the CP had been signed, it was a lot of, you know, people were excited that we had a new country. I was one of the people that was excited for that because my father was a freedom fighter, and all this time he was telling us about what we can realize for ourselves as South Sudanese as opposed to, you know, as a Sudan in general, because they didn't see us as, you know, people that can run our own nation. So when I went back to South Sudan in 2006, from the inception of, you know, us having that CPA signed, things were not running right. In 2006 already, you could see that our political leaders had a vision on something else other than developing the South Sudan. You know, people are more concerned about bringing cars into South Sudan as opposed to trying to fix the healthcare system or the education system or the roads itself. I mean, imagine somebody buying a car when the road is not good enough to actually be able to drive on it. So
the future is in your hands, and if you are very, if you like, negative about the issues in the country, how are you going to run this country?
Well, to be honest, it's not that we are negative about that. Every politician that comes or is in South Sudan, they only talk about issues of the past. None of them are coming with solutions to how we can fix South Sudan. Everyone is complaining about what the government is not doing, but they're not telling you how they can be able to solve it. And I feel like we as the youth, we are looking towards the future. These people have already had their future, and it's now, because most of them say, we didn't eat, now it's time for us to eat. You know, if they eat it all, what are the youth gonna eat? We as the youth have to be the solution for South Sudan, and I feel like, you know, if we're given this opportunity, we have a vision for what we can be able to do for South Sudan. Not just talk about the past.
But why would you be given an opportunity? You're not disadvantaged. Why should you be given an opportunity?
It's not necessarily given an opportunity, as I said, but it's more or less, you know, being ushered in. Because if you think about it, those same leaders that we have, they were ushered in by a different group of leaders that were there before them. But for these people, they are more or less inclined to want to stay in power until the end of it. You think about right now, we're 17 years or 18 years into being in power, or the same group of people being in power. That's including Riek Machar. That's 17 years of having the same thing happen over and over again. No results whatsoever. We still have a poor healthcare system. You know, the regular person in South Sudan is not enjoying the fruits of this peace that we say we have, or they say we have. They are not, the regular person in South Sudan is not enjoying, right, the separation that we had. If you talk to some people, common people like in South Sudan, they will tell you that they probably had it better off under Sudan than they're having it under South Sudan. Now, is that something that we should be happy about? We all wanted to have our own country. Now that we have our own country, right, shouldn't the lowest person in that society be able to enjoy the fruits of this labor? But we're only seeing this with the elites on the top. So that's why I'm saying, you know, maybe it's time for them to move out the way and give it to, you know, the second generation to come in.
But I mean, it's easily said than done.
Very true.
The issues in South Sudan needs a collective approach. Young people like you are fired up, calling for change. And how are you going to achieve this change that you are aspiring for?
That's a very good question. Right. Collectively, it's going to take all South Sudanese to solve this issue. And I will go by saying, if you're building a house, if your father starts by building a small tukul, and you come in and take and understand that you can be able to make bricks and build a better house with it, a better structure, right? You're taking off from what your father started. I'm not trying to discredit these people for fighting for 20 years and making South Sudan a country. I'm not taking that away from them. But what I'm trying to say is that we appreciate what they did. They started a building block for South Sudan. Now give it to the next generation so they can see, you know, a realization of what South Sudan can be. We're all coming in with different ideas, and it's not only going to take the youth to build it, but the adults with their ideas. And if you can all come and put it all together collectively, we can be able to have a better South Sudan.
If you are given an opportunity to speak directly to the leadership in South Sudan, what would you tell them?
Honestly speaking, I think it's time for them to put their guns down. That's number one. And number two, to step down. It's been 18 years of the same people running South Sudan. And what do we have? Nothing to show for it. The roads are worse. There's no health care in South Sudan. All we see is buildings going up. The schools are terrible. What can they say that they're doing that's helping South Sudanese people? I would appeal to their humanity rather than to their pocket. You want to see the lowest person in South Sudan actually realizing the fruits of the labor of the war that they fought for 20 years.
That's Victor Subek, a young South Sudanese activist. He spoke to me during a South Sudanese conference in the U.S. state of Minnesota. Maura Jack, Chol Pal, and Wani Lokulang, what are your reactions to what Victor Subek just raised? I will start with you, Maura.
He's right that we're supposed to have our own first steps. And you need a vision first. What do you want to achieve in life? And what type of legacy you want to leave for the other generation? And what belongs to your father belongs to your father. What belongs to the family belongs to the family. What do you have? Where are we now? Because most of the youth now, I'm son of so-and-so, or I'm a daughter of so-and-so.
I mean, at your age, your father will not allow you to leave the home to go and stay on your own. Because there are a lot of cultural issues.
I've tried. We shouldn't even influence culture in our dreams, in our plans, and in life as well. Culture is culture and it's respected, but it has also a limit. For instance, in schools, how many children want them to be educated and then to take over? We are not going to live here forever. Do we want them to be literate, for instance, not to go to school?
Thank you. Wani Kulang, talk to me about your feelings on what Victor has raised. He raised a lot of issues, talking about roads, talking about hospital, talking about education. He's saying he has not seen those things. Instead, what he's seeing, big cars on roads that are not tarmacked well. And if you talk good roads, it's just inside Jubatown. When you out of Jubatown, you're on a rough road.
I think Victor is correct on that. What I would say just in brief is that our liberators have done a great job liberating the country. And from 2005 up to 2011 and up to date, what's been happening is that people have been, like, you know, dancing and celebrating, like, you know, the liberation, like, you know, struggle. It's a success, yeah. But we shouldn't continue dancing and celebrating because now we have to face the reality. Yes, we are an independent country. So what next? We have to build a country. And how do you build a country? By investing in the youth. And by the way, when we, the youth, say that we want to be given opportunity, how I see that is that it's not that we want to be given...
But why should you be given an opportunity? Are you disadvantaged?
Yeah, this is what I'm trying to say. It's not that we want to be given, like, you know, position. For someone like me, for example, I'm not, like, you know, getting my salary from the government. No, I'm working, like, you know, outside the government to, like, you know, feed myself. All that we're asking for, security in the country to be able to do business. Is the environment safe for us to do business? No, it's not. Can I now go, like, you know, to places, like, you know, outside Juba, for example, to do business? No. Even inside Juba here, it's still risky. someone can come, like, you know, pump your shop, break it, like, you know, the city council, the tax is very high. So the environment is not conducive for you to do business. So we need that environment to be very conducive so that at least we will be able to, like, you know, empower ourselves.
Echol Pal, your reaction to this, the comments from Wani and Mwaura?
Yeah, I agree with them. Some people in Juba think when you have a BA is a measure of being rich. Okay? One of the professors with whom I had an informal chat told me that he's also a liberator. He said we have not been detached from the liberation mindset. This means...
What do you mean?
This means during the war there was no accountability. You are an area commander. You are the commander-in-chief in that area. The buck is stopped with you. But here, in the same mindset is brought to Juba, okay, independent. The commanders turn politicians. They started it on the wrong footing by scrambling over...
None of them is in the studio here to defend themselves.
Yeah.
But are there no other... progress that these commanders have done for this country? I've been in Juba in and out, and Juba has changed. You can see skyscrapers, you can see a lot of things.
Yeah, but these are private businesses. These are not government projects. You see governments going to open, to inaugurate them, but they are not theirs. They only
How do you know?
Yeah,
because, maybe they are shareholders.
No, yeah, but it could be private. They have not made it public. I agree with my brother, no roads, even for their B8s, for their B6 and all that. The most important thing is to provide security so that I go and work in Yei without any turbulence. I go and work in Warab, but now I cannot go to Warab unless I know somebody. I go with somebody who is a friend of mine. But personal, I can't go because it's risky. Same thing, the people from Warab cannot go to my area without me going with them. So actually the country is divided and it needs time to put it together.
Mwaura, you have been awarded for your work in journalism. Are you documenting these issues down and informing the South Sudanese society that there are issues here that we need to look at?
Yeah, sure. From my visits to the training centers, I can give an example. I've been interviewed like a lot of trainees. They are complaining.
You mean training center of what? Soldiers?
Soldiers, yeah. Mm-hmm. In different parts of the country. Most of the trainees, they are complaining about inequality, tribalism, and even distribution of the food, a lot of things. And everything that you are in need of, you must know someone, as Doctor just mentioned here. And the other thing is, we don't have this equality.
What about someone who does not know anybody? How would they
survive?
That's
the issue, you know? It's a big issue because... We are lacking this humanity that we had before. We are lacking that test. For instance, my neighbor didn't show up today. Let me go and check on my neighbor. We don't have that now. How many street children we have? How many violations against human rights happening, for instance? How many headlines, like negative headlines, taking place instead of positive ones?
Yeah, but let us bring that in the context of young people being the majority of the population. And they say the young people are the leaders of tomorrow. How does that impact on your journey for your personal or collective progress?
It's a huge plan ahead, for instance. Let me say it like that. And it has a lot of conflict of interest.
Wani is nodding, so I will go to him. Wani, what do you say about these issues? They're quite serious issues here.
Yeah, the statement that you just said, like, you know, the statement that they keep telling us, like, you know, you, the youth, are, like, you know, the future of tomorrow. It's a very... Like,
indeed you are. If the population of South Sudan, 70% are young people, you are the future of tomorrow.
Indeed, but that's a scam, because right now the opportunity is not being given to us. The environment is not conducive for us to be the leaders of tomorrow. How do you expect me to be a leader of tomorrow when I'm not going to school?
But someone would also ask you, what are you doing to change that environment that you're calling unfavorable?
Well, I mean, what will a child of, like, you know, 5 years old do about education? That's not his responsibility. He's supposed to be in a school, but he's not being given the opportunity.
But it's the responsibility of the parents to take the children to school.
Yes, but
if you give birth to a child, you're supposed to take that child to school.
Yes, but the parent is now, like, on duty, serving in the government, but there is no salary. Nothing is happening. He's not given salary for 6 months. What's he going to do? He will have to leave the child, like, on the street. Instead of focusing on school, now he's focusing on trying to feed the child, to keep the child alive. Which one will you choose, between going to school or, like, you know, staying alive? So this is a challenge that, like, you know, we have to work together collectively. And if, like, you know, the elders want us to really be, like, you know, the youth of tomorrow, then they have to, like, you know, make sure, like, you know, the environment is conducive for us to really be the leaders of tomorrow. They have to teach us, because, like, you know, without showing us the ways that will help us be, like, leaders of tomorrow, we'll be just the same like them.
See, like, I see you here in the studio here representing three states, Central Equatoria, Jonglei, and Warap. So Maura was raising a question that people are no longer living, like, together like before. Dr. Chol, talk to me about your experience. You meet a lot of people in your line of duty every day. And even today when we were driving with you around the town, a lot of people were greeting you.
Yeah, but this is the nature of my job. The job I do does not discriminate. That's why I'm saying, even in Warap, I can work, provided that there is security. And I agree with the young man that when people say that the youth are leaders of tomorrow, verbally, without them being groomed, it means nothing. Even at home, if you want your, you can have 10 children. But you will have one child that you will indoctrinate in case something happened, God forbid, that when I am not there, you do this and this. In a nutshell, the youth who are said to be the leaders of tomorrow needs to be groomed. But who will do that? Nobody.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, why would you like somebody to groom you when you are on your 2 feet and you can you can walk, you can do stuff for yourself?
Yeah, even where I work, if doctors who graduate today, they need to be trained so that they take over. There are ways. You show people that do this, so that you become a good person.
Let us give our sister an opportunity. I mean, do you agree with Paul that somebody has to be groomed?
Not really.
Why?
We have a brain. Why the brain is there? Even if you don't go to school, also you have a brain, isn't it? And you feel the pain. You don't wait for the fire to reach all the way to your house. You have to put it off, right? So even if our elders, they're not around, for instance, what are we going to do next? We have to create opportunities. And then, for instance, if there is no any opportunities, we have to look for it. Whatever it takes, we have to look for it, because we want stability in different sectors, economic, peace instability, name it.
Wani, the media industry in the country here is, I mean, there are so many radio stations, so many newspapers, and yet young men and women still complain that they are not given an opportunity to take part in nation building. What is your take in line with your work?
First and foremost, I mean, the work that I do really connects me to almost everyone from different parts of the country. I travel a lot and I meet people from, like, you know, all the states. But when the youth say that they're not being given the opportunity, like I said before, it's not that, like, you know, the opportunities are not there. Like, right now, everyone can, like, you know, if you want to work in the media, you're highly welcome in the media. There are a lot of opportunities, like, you know, in the media. And most part of the media, actually.
But what about the statement you said earlier that you must know someone somewhere for you to become successful?
Yes, that's why I say it. But we are, like, you know, not engaging ourselves, like, you know, positively. We're engaging ourselves, actually, negatively. You see that? It's because, like, you know, I bring you in just because I know you. You see, I'll give you an opportunity. But if we're just treating ourselves as brothers and sisters, or we treat each other, like, you know, based on the knowledge that we have, or by looking, like, putting the interest of the country first, what's needed to be done for the country, in that sense, there'll be a lot of opportunities, and we'll actually, like, you know, succeed together.
But there was a statement here made by Dr. Paul, who said that tribalism is one of the issues affecting young people. Do you subscribe to his conclusion?
They are influenced. For instance, I believe Mr. So-and-so or Miss So-and-so is a good leader. What about you? You don't believe in yourself. For instance, in Khartoum, you don't know, like, who's from where or whatever tribe it is.
When everybody was living in refuge.
Yes.
That's what you mean.
Yes. So when we came back home, everyone started pointing, like, oh, I'm from this area, I'm from this area. What's new in this map of South Sudan, for instance? And the other thing is, it's not about knowing someone, but now we start, like, we can make money as a god instead of putting humanity.
So you mean people are worshipping money?
Yes. and people can kill for that money. That's why you see like a lot of things. It's not.
I mean, there are people who have written. I mean, I don't want to cut you short, but there are people who have written a lot about young men and women in South Sudan who follow their leaders blindly without questioning why they should be, let's say, involved in rebellion. Some people don't question why you want me to rebel. They just go because so-and-so has rebelled, so I follow them. Talk to me from your Kobo hat, Dr. Pal. Why is that happening? Why do people follow? This is in the documents that young men and women in South Sudan are being influenced by their clansmen.
I said it from the beginning that it is the politician who started this. Because when they quarreled in 2013, you see how funny they are. They said it was an ethnic war, Nuer and the Dinka. When they agreed, they said it was the SPLM. And in fact, they started it as an internal power wrangle within that Red SPLM house, obviously. When they fought, they involved the citizens. Then they said now there is an ethnic war in South Sudan. That was what forced many youths to follow their tribesmen. In fact, there was no motivation, there was no money. Automatically, you would find yourself running away. But myself, I didn't go.
You decided to stay in Juba.
I stayed in Juba and I did not go to UNMISS. I'm secure. I work in the hospital. My colleagues, the Dinka doctors, they are with me. No problem. It is because I know at the end of the day, they will say it was not ethnic. Yeah. And when they went, some Dinka politicians went with the Nuer and the Nuer men with the government.
Yeah, I say, there are no politicians in the studio here to defend themselves.
Yeah.
But let us take the issues, you know, face value. If you are asked to go and join whatnot, don't you have a mind to think and, say why?
And that is why I said I did not go, because there was no... By the way, I'm a Red Army. I'm a trained Red Army soldier. I was in the SPLA. There was no division. We used to refer to ourselves as comrade when the word comrade was having its meaning. Not this comrade of... Now,
why is this comrade of today different from the comrade of last time?
The one of last time is that you would find yourself in the midst of, for instance, I'm a Nuer, I find myself in the midst of 100 Dinkas, but they will not segregate. If I'm wounded, they carry me. If I'm hungry, they run and bring food. It used to happen, and I am an eyewitness. Thank God I'm alive up to now.
Wani, could you talk to us about your experience on these issues of... tribalism and young people following their leaders blindly?
I think it happens because of many reasons. One, the level of the literacy rate in the country is really very low if you look around, so people can easily be manipulated. Secondly, the economic situation plays a great role. For example, you see most of the youth, they are unemployed. They don't have anything to do. They're just like, wandering around and sitting idle. So someone will just come from there. It's your uncle, not someone from far. Close family member. Hey, if you support my agenda ABC, I'll give you this X amount of money. And because you don't have anything, and because you're poor, you'll be like, why not? Let me take it without giving it a second thought. And that's where, most of the youth end up, being in the military or, dying in the field, trying to fight each other and all of these things. And it's really something very bad that I would advise the youth to start thinking for themselves and avoid being trapped into this kind of...
But it easily said, a question that begs an answer here is, how can you come together as one nation for a purpose? The purpose is building this country called South Sudan. How can you come together?
Giving the space within ourselves. If I have, let's assume, a business, I will look for 10 fellow youth.
You go and look for somebody from Yamdio as opposed to somebody from Warab to be in your business?
No, it depends on the type of the opportunity I want to give out. For instance, I have a reserved money. I don't have anything to do with it. Instead of buying a fancy car or buying a house in Nairobi, let me do something for the youth. Whether they will like me or not, it's not necessary. But what I want to do, I need to make sure that I had something I have done in this country before. Because tomorrow will come, then the person will remember, I've started up, with a capital from so-and-so.
But I've seen businesses here. I've gone to some businesses here, and just looking around, you go into a shop, you look around. If the owner is from Yambio, a lot of people around there look.
Family members only.
Yeah. And if the owner is from Akobo, a lot of people there are from Akobo. And if the owner is from Central Equatoria, a lot of people inside the shop are from Central Equatoria. Yes. So how are we going to build a nation with that kind of mentality?
We have to wipe out this issue of tribalism because we are influenced, brainwashed. It wasn't there. Maybe it was an excuse being influenced on us. See? So how are we going to do it? Then we have to impose that space. We shouldn't wait until we say we're supposed to be given in a golden plate. It's not going to happen, and it will never happen. We have to do it by ourselves. For instance, I will go and say, hey, Mr. X or Miss X, I want to do 1, 2, 3, 4. What do you think? Maybe one or two of them will accept, but the rest will refuse. We have to keep it going, because if we will surrender, then you don't have
Let me just remind our listeners that you are listening to South Sudan in Focus, coming to you live from Juba. With me in the studio here is Maura Ajak, an award-winning journalist, Dr. Chol Pal, a South Sudanese medical professional, and Wani Lokulang, a media entrepreneur. They are discussing the issues of how the youth can be involved in building this nation. Wani, the ball is in your court. We are still talking about this division among young people.
It's going to be difficult to try to solve this problem in a blink of an eye, because this is a really big problem that needs some behavior changes. So I think the best way that we can start from is to make sure we have schools that accommodate everyone. In the school, you can have someone from Juba, someone from Bor, someone from Torit, someone from Yambi, and all of that. Because when we learn together, we'll learn how to live together. This is what. Secondly, when we do recruitment, we don't have to look to who is your dad, who is your uncle, where you're coming from, and all of this.
And
we have to recruit.
Just hold your thoughts there. I've been told that I have to read a piece from the house here. Some South Sudanese say they want a proposed sexual and reproductive health bill in the East African Legislative Assembly to include provisions on prevention of teenage pregnancies and access to universal health care. Bishop James Logos of the African Inland Church says the bill should address harmful practices such as female genital mutilation and early child marriage. Ding Magot has more for VOA from Juba. I'm told that tape is not ready, but let's continue to discuss. We have been given a green light to talk and talk and talk. Dr. Paul,
yeah.
I want to bring this issue of people asking for opportunity. Why should opportunity be given to youth? Why can't you, as an able-bodied person, think about what you want to do? Why should we all be employed by the government?
I agree with you. There is this misconception that when you graduate from the university, automatically you get a job with the government. That is a misconception. I've been to many places in the region, and some parts. Not all graduates will. But if you come to South Sudan, you will find that the youths are wrangling over who becomes the first manager of a given minister. Secondly, about this involvement of youth in the state building, I am of the opinion that we can use Rwanda as a blueprint. So that we hold conferences. Youth go to Warab, they go to Yambio, they go to Akobo, they go to Bor. Youth from all the six of
Correct.
The tribes.
I agree with you. I've been told I have 30 seconds.
Okay.
One year, I give you a parting shot. What is the solution to this? 2 seconds, three.
I think we need to start doing things ourselves instead of waiting for the opportunity to be given for us. And you don't have to work for the government to really make a difference. You can do it from the private sector. For example, right now I work for myself. I run my own media house, and I'm also the executive director of Impact Foundation, giving back to the country. But indirectly, I still work for the government. I work for the state-run television EBC, and if they have any work, they'll call me. We'll go do it for free.
Correct. Thank you for that, Maura. 3 seconds, please wrap up, because we need to close this discussion.
Every youth should go and look for the opportunity by themselves, not to wait. Ask and knock. Ask and knock and you will get it. Yeah.
Thank you very much, Maura Jack, Dr. Cholpal, and Wani Kulang. That's all we prepared for you on this live broadcast from the South Sudan's capital, Juba. We now leave you with Emmanuel Kembe and the song, Let Us Celebrate. Indeed, today is a day for celebration.
Yeah, let me.